Welcome to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your hosts, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows and Cody Kellum of Born and Raised Outdoors.
At GoHunt.com, our goal is to be the very best at what we do. We are constantly putting value and new information at our users' fingertips. It's our job to always go above and beyond for our customers. We don't want you to stress days of researching or paying hunting consultants to give you unreliable and opinionated information before your hunt. That's why we're giving you the power and ability to find exactly what you want when you want it. And with the introduction of draw odds and filtering 2.0, it's never been easier. So why wait? Join the movement today and start finding the perfect hunt for you. Go Hunt Insider, the new breed of hunter. Visit GoHunt.com/insider and join the movement.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox. Cody Kellum is still madly editing for the Born and Raised Outdoors YouTube channel, so we probably won't have him for a couple more weeks yet, but I did have a conversation with him on the phone the other day, and they're cranking along and having a good time doing it. So if you haven't caught up on the Born and Raised Outdoor or YouTube channel, Born and Raised Outdoors YouTube channel, be sure to check in with them and see how their elk adventures and misadventures are going. In the meantime, I'm excited. I kind of been dreaming about doing this for a while, kind of a sleeper state podcast or series of podcasts kind of covering states that don't get a lot of spotlight shine or shown on them and offer opportunities outside of that kind of August and September timeframe so that, you know, kind of creep into that October, November, December, yet still offer, you know, one of my favorite game animals, mule deer, as an option there. To start out, we're going to cover South Dakota, and I'm excited. We've got Mark Vwig on the phone, and he does ad sales for Traditional Bowhunter magazine and also happens to be a resident of South Dakota. How you doing, Mark?
Doing great, Sal.
Right on, right on. And you are on the road, so we got you on your cell phone. So, you know, apologize to the listeners if the call recording quality isn't as great as it could be, but I'm glad to get you on the phone here. Where are you heading?
Actually, don't tell my wife. I'm supposed to be working at home today, but I've got my two labs with me, and we're going to head out for a short pheasant hunt before I pick the kids up from school this afternoon.
Oh, good deal. Good deal. Yeah, I've got a buddy that loves the pheasant hunt there in South Dakota. That's probably what that state is best known for, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Well, right now, too, East River, and it's broken up. South Dakota is broken up into two sections. Essentially, the Missouri River splits the state into a west half and an east half. So what you'll hear when it comes to tags, especially gun tags, you'll hear East River, West River. Currently, the gun season for East River is running. It starts the weekend before Thanksgiving and then runs the weekend after. So you can bow hunt during that time, but I elect not to.
A little crazy then, huh?
Excuse me?
It's a little crazy with the activity.
Not as much as what you think. We're not a very populous state, and most of the ground East River is private, so you don't really run into that many people, gun hunters, that is. But I don't, the private ground I've got on this part of the state is fairly small and limited, so that's why I elect not to bow hunt during that time.
Gotcha. And those deer, I'd imagine that's got to be, you know, in the rut at that point in time.
Yeah, it's pretty much winding down.
So from an opportunity standpoint, it sounds like hunting the West River side or west of the Missouri River, as far as from a public land standpoint, is a better option if somebody's looking to get into hunting South Dakota, huh?
Yes, especially for mule deer. There's mule deer opportunities on the east side along the Missouri River Bluffs, north of Chamberlain, well, north and south of Chamberlain, but much more public ground, northwestern South Dakota. And one thing about South Dakota, as far as non-residents, is we have a draw, but it's a guaranteed draw. So you don't have to, and what we'll see a lot of times, a lot of non-residents will try to draw other states for mule deer, and if they don't get the tag they're looking for and don't want to burn preference points, they'll go ahead and use South Dakota as sort of a plan B.
Sure. What's the deadline on that draw date?
There's not a deadline. That's the other thing about it.
Okay.
Typically, you're looking at a turnaround of about 2 weeks in receiving your tag. Now, on the National Forest, and it's Custer National Forest in the northwest corner, and everybody probably is familiar with the Black Hills because, you know, Mount Rushmore and Crazy Horse Monument, but... you have to apply for an access permit, and it's just their way of being able to read what type of traffic they're getting in those two areas. So, but a lot of public land, and it's, you know, like a lot of places, you just need to do your homework beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's a lot of access in that part of the country. East River, of course, you know, as I mentioned, there's mule deer along the Missouri breaks on the east side. The rest of the East River is whitetails. There's pretty good hunting. I mean, a lot of the places are set aside for pheasant hunting and duck hunting. You'd be surprised at the amount of whitetail sign you see there. It's just a lot of your hunting is going to have to be, brown blind type hunting. There's not a lot of trees. In fact, the East River, most of the trees you'll see are shelter belts that have been planted by somebody, you know, years ago, but not a lot of trees that are going to come up naturally unless they're the water source. You'll see some cottonwoods, maybe willow.
I was going to say, on the Custer National Forest and the Black Hills, is that a fairly heavily timbered, that public land, is that fairly heavily timbered, or is it going to lend itself to kind of some spot and stalk if you can find some more open type of country?
The Black Hills is heavily timbered. Although you certainly, you know, could do spot and stalk there, and that is how most people even hunt them in the Black Hills. But Custer is pretty wide open. It's thin strips, and I say by thin, you know, a couple miles, 2 to 5 miles wide, 20 miles long type of sections. Well, maybe not 20 miles, but broken up into different sections. The problem that you have in some of it, though, is access, just like anywhere in the West when it comes to public land. But a lot of spot and stalk in the northwest corner of the state. And I think sometimes people tend to overlook the walk-in areas and state ground.
Okay.
You know, along with the national forest. So,
do they have in any of those properties? Do they have restrictions as far as like being able to camp overnight, like they do on the Colorado and Wyoming state lands?
Yeah, the only place you can camp south are going to be in the national forest.
Okay.
You can't camp, in the walk-in areas or state areas, just like you're mentioning with Colorado or Wyoming.
So
restricted in that regard. You may have to do a little bit of driving if you're going to get off the national forest land.
And are those...
But the other thing is that I mentioned, compared to Wyoming and Colorado, and I know you've done a lot of hunting in both Colorado and Nevada, it's not... You can take a bivvy, but you're looking at probably 1 to 2 miles in maximum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
National forest ground, and it's not high elevation hunting. You're looking at 3,500 to 4,000 feet. So you know, people from coming from the east concerned about elevation, certainly not in South Dakota. It's high plains, but not, you know, mountain type situations.
Right. Now, how about the some of the public lands that might encompass some of the badlands? I hunted South Dakota, I don't know, it was probably 15 years ago, and I think I hunted it three times in a maybe a 15 to 20 year ago stretch there. So it's been a long time, and a lot of the details are a little fuzzy there, but I do recall hunting in the Badlands proper, and I don't know what, you know, kind of public land it was there that I was hunting on, and we just day hunted it, but it was in that kind of, I want to say it was probably a December kind of time frame, and you know, we got into the mule deer, you know, pretty decent. What kind of opportunities are there in that kind of Badlands country?
Well, you have the national grasslands. Fort Pierre National Grasslands are in that area, and there's a lot of public ground. You know, it's your typical broken, well, you know, the Badlands, just broken type of country, which we all like for mule deer. I mean, you can get out of, the deer can get out of sight, and you can certainly get out of sight and be able to make a move on them. So, but there is a lot. I would say most of it is going to be walk-ins. So there's some big walk-in ranches in that area. And then the national grasslands is probably what you were on.
So the walk-in is private land that the landowners have signed up with the Fish and Game to offer hunter access. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And on that national grasslands, are you allowed to camp overnight on that country?
You are allowed to camp overnight on national grasslands.
Okay. So if somebody was looking to come out for a week and didn't want to, you know, spend their nights in a hotel, they'd be looking to do either to find some national grasslands or find some national forest or find some walk-in that was adjacent to some grasslands or national forest that they could kind of camp on the edge of and then hunt into the walk-in area.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, I think that would that's probably the best way to handle it.
How has South Dakota been? I know I can't remember how many years ago it was. Must have been 3 or 4 years ago. You guys had multiple pretty bad winters as far as really cold temperatures and a lot of snow. How are the deer doing there?
The deer population, the mule deer population, is stable. We had a real bad snowstorm back about, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, 20 inches of snow in late October, real wet, and certainly it decimated a lot of the cow herds in the, you know, northwestern South Dakota, and to a degree affected the deer herd, but they're coming back pretty strong. I would say it's at this point it's certainly stable. Antelope have come back pretty strong. They're not where they were 10 years ago, but they much better than what they were 5 years ago.
Well, that's encouraging. And, yeah, I hunted antelope probably, trying to remember how long ago that was, somewhere in that 15 or 16 years ago. And I was pretty surprised at how good the antelope hunting was there on public land. I was only out there for 4 days, and I got to say it was probably one of the most humbling 4 days I've had in my hunting experience. I was hunting with a compound at that point in time, and yeah, I couldn't miss shooting at dirt clods out to 70 yards, but man, I missed antelope all the way down to 20 yards. And I think I missed at least a shot a day while I was there. I can't explain what happened, but it was extremely frustrating and humiliating experience. But I got into some prairie dog towns and at least made up for it with some fun there.
And a lot of prairie dogs in that part of the country. Well, I guess I don't have to explain my miss on antelope this year then. So
no, not at all. I mean, particularly if you're shooting a stick bow, you don't have to do a lot of explaining, especially, I mean, geez, with the compound and the way I was shooting, like I said, when I was stump shooting, I was just mystified. And I had a buddy of mine that lived out there in Rapid City that was kind of toting me around and helping me, you know, out with his local knowledge there. And I felt so bad by the time that we left. I'm sure he was pretty happy to put me on the plane headed home.
Well, you know, the thing about antelope, we don't get a lot of non-resident pressure because most people are heading to Wyoming. Mm-hmm. But it's also, you know, same thing with antelope. It's a draw, but it's a guaranteed draw for non-residents. And they're pretty good numbers. Again, that northwestern South Dakota around Buffalo, there's pretty good numbers of antelope. It's not Wyoming, but you certainly can find antelope on public ground.
And it looks like to fill in some information here, I printed out the copy of the regulations here, at least the tag costs. An antelope tag for non-resident is $286, and that's for any antelope. Either sex, and then if you want to get an additional doe tag, that's $80. Now, is it limited? Both, it looks like the pricing is the same for non-resident for both deer and antelope, as well as doe tags for either deer or antelope. They're both $80 for a doe tag, both $286 for non-resident either sex on deer or antelope. Are you able to buy multiple doe tags, or are you limited to one doe tag?
My understanding is it's one doe tag. And okay. That's a whitetail doe tag.
Okay, so you can't get a mule deer doe tag specifically. You can only
whitetail only.
All right, so on mule deer, you could use your one tag for either sex on mule deer, but I cannot buy an additional doe tag. Okay, that's good to know. All right. And the season dates for archery run September 23rd through, looks like, the 15th of January. So that's a, man, that's a tough
the last 15 days in January are doe only.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. I got you. Antlerless tags. Yeah. January 1st through the 15th. So really it's the 23rd of December, of September through the 31st of December is either sex, then an antlerless after the 1st of January.
Yeah. I think you had mentioned when you came out, you hunted in December, and that's a really good time for the fact that gun seasons are over. You're not going to be battling the pressure, from other, competing with other archers. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I think that's a really good time. Person can, has done their archery hunting, let's say early season, or, whitetails through the rut if they're from back east, or well, even from out west, and then want to do a little additional hunting. December is a good time.
As I recall, I was hunting that first week of December, and maybe it was a second estrus, but I think I remember seeing rut activity with the mule deer during that time.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the thing is, well, West River tags for gun season, their gun season starts a week earlier than the East River does. So okay. They'll be done the weekend of Thanksgiving with gun season. So if you come out the first week in December, they've had a week to settle down, mm-hmm. and get back to normal activity.
Right. Yeah, I remember seeing some pretty decent mule deer, in that 150 to 160 class. What kind of, in your experience, is that kind of on the upper end that you'll see there in South Dakota? I know I've seen an occasional, whopper come out of South Dakota, but is that kind of an anomaly or?
Well, I mean, I saw some gun kills this year that were real impressive, and But I would say, yeah, 150, 160 is a really good mule deer buck in South Dakota. So, you know, of course, I went whitetail hunting in Illinois before. And, you know, expecting or hoping for that 150 buck, go there and spend a week. And is that reality? You know, if you have a week, probably not. Do you see a couple of them? Yeah. But, you know, closing the deal with a sick bow when you got a week time, pretty tough.
Yeah, it seems like it seems like probably, you know, a good plan, and this kind of could really go for any state, but is to spend, you know, spend your first year kind of getting to know, you know, the country and the area, and then and be able to, you know, in future years kind of rely and build upon that knowledge that you build in the first couple of years before you could really you know, not that you can't plan on success the first year or any subsequent year, really, but kind of build on that knowledge there and really start to get to know an area more intimately. And then as you do, your chances of success are going to go, you know, are going to climb.
Yeah, totally agree. I always say it's more not finding where they are, it's finding out where they're not.
Right, so. Right.
But, and a lot of that, and you know as well as I do, and I know you do a lot of scouting online. You know, when it comes to mule deer, especially in high plains, you need to find broken country. And you know, it shows up when you're looking, for instance, if you're talking about the Badlands area, it looks like white, chalky areas when you're looking at it online. And that's your broken country, Badlands type of country. And, you know, you'd need to look for changes in elevation. And it can, when you're talking about relatively flat or level country, it's not going to be near as severe as what it would in mountainous country. So you just need to take that into consideration.
Yeah, one of the things I'll say about hunting the Badlands is it's deceivingly challenging from a physical standpoint. You're not getting a lot of mountains that you're having to climb and go over, but you're getting a lot of constant undulation. If you want to go from point A to point B, man, it's like, you know, the elevation profile, it may not be have high peaks, but it's got lots of dips.
I call it deceptive. Yeah. It's a deceptive terrain. You look across, you're like you're saying, and it's like, oh, I don't have to climb a mountain. But by the time you get to where you're going, you probably might as well have climbed that mountain. So,
right. Right.
Yeah.
There's the neat thing about those, all those little, you know, variations in topography, it gives you a lot of, you know, a lot of opportunity if you know, just are walking along the edge of those draws and stuff to kind of to constantly be glassing and looking for an animal that's tucked down into the bottom, one of those to you know, get out of the wind or maybe one that's kind of, you know, in an undercut bank or what have you.
Well, I don't, you know, you mentioned get out of the wind. It does blow a little bit here in South Dakota, and I'm sure you experienced that when you hunted here. You know, wind blowing 30 to 40. In fact, you know, on the when you watch the weather, though, up to 30 miles an hour is breezy, and 30 and above we call windy. So, and steady is, you know, 10 to 15.
Right. Now, are you guys, when the wind, you know, is blowing, which is most of the time, is it typically from a pretty consistent direction where, like in the mountains, you get a lot of swirling winds?
I think it's more consistent. Yeah, you don't get the swirling winds like you would in a mountainous situation. And actually, you can certainly use it to your advantage when it comes to stalking a deer or any animal for that matter. It hides, you know, sound. And they're animals here are they're used to the wind. They don't lay down when it's relatively windy. Now, if it's blowing 50 and above, yeah, that's a little bit different situation. But I remember hunting whitetails here 2 or 3 years ago. I had a nice 5x5 come through, and it was blowing. It was gusting that day up to 70 miles an hour.
Holy smokes.
And he acted like it was a walk in the park.
Huh.
So during the rut, but still, back in the Midwest where I'm originally from, they certainly would have been laid up.
Yeah, that's, it's like the deer in Oregon when it's raining, they're not, heading for thick cover and hold up. If they did that, they'd starve to death.
Right. Never move.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It rains enough out there that the deer just have to learn to put up with it, just like the wind blowing there in South Dakota.
Yeah.
Hopping back over to the antelope there, it sounds, kind of like that's might be one of the better sleeper opportunities as far as you talking about, Wyoming, the fame of Wyoming antelope kind of pulling the pressure off of South Dakota. If you were looking at, maybe you had a week of vacation and you wanted to do a Western hunt and you were going to look at South Dakota for either, a deer hunting opportunity or an antelope, would you spend your time hunting antelope or deer? What's your thoughts?
Oh boy. The problem you run into that first week of archery season, which comes in the last weekend in September for deer, a lot of pressure.
Uh-huh.
And to get an overlap during, let's say if I was, you can do a combination hunt, deer or antelope go until the first week, archery go until the first week of October, and then there's a week-long gun season. So you can hunt both of them during that period. Now, if I was going to come out and do one or the other, I would probably come out and hunt the rut and decoy in that period of that second week in September. The only time, the problem with the antelope rut is it runs pretty concurrently with the elk rut. So, that's why people tend to hunt elk that time of year instead of antelope, but it can be really good. And one or the other, that's a tough one, South. It's almost like, what do you like to do more?
Sure. And are your antelope out there pretty responsive to decoys?
They are, although, I've seen a lot more of the heads-up type of decoys and the pop-up type of decoys. What I've been using lately is a doe decoy. Made out of that I pieced together through, I take a flambeau, and this isn't my idea, it's a friend of mine, but a flambeau deer decoy and then a taxidermy form of an antelope, doe antelope, and then cut off the, this is rather, I know, convoluted and kind of a long process to make a decoy, but it seems like it really works. And then, you take that antelope form and with screws, you put that on where the head and neck of the original deer decoy was. And then you cover it with terry cloth. You spray on the spray on glue and then put the terry cloth on and paint it. And it works it's very effective.
Interesting.
I don't know, South, that you'd want to carry one all over the, but you can hike a mile with them. They're not all that difficult. Legs come off and pretty easy to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it gives you kind of a realistic three-dimensional decoy then at that point.
Yeah. It works pretty well.
And are you able to decoy those in close enough into stick bow range that way?
I've had them in within 10 yards and even good bucks. It's sort of like you know, if you pop one up, you sneak up on a herd, and if you're able to, if, especially if there's brown bales around or something like that, you can see that buck look over like, what in the world, or how did she get away from, you know, the rest of the herd, and here he comes. So, yeah, no, it, and as you know, with decoying, a lot of times it's, you know, it could be a train wreck, but it's about one of the more exciting ways to hunt anything. So.
Mm-hmm. And you're finding better luck using a doe decoy than like a small buck?
I am, yeah, absolutely.
Huh. Interesting.
You know, with, especially with bigger bucks versus now smaller bucks, they'll come in, but it seems like they're looking over the shoulder expecting a bigger buck to come in and take them on or something than what you might expect. So, But I have had good luck with good-sized bucks. So.
And then if you're going to try to come out and time, you know, a Western hunt there for mule deer for the rut, what time frame would you pick?
I would
there?
Okay. Here's the situation. I would come out either last week in October, first week in November, or you know, if you can't make it that time of year, I would come out first week in December.
So that last week October, are you kind of catching the pre-rut there, just as things are kind of starting to wind up?
Yeah, the reason I would do that is you're looking at the gun season starts the second weekend in November.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my reasoning behind coming out either, you know, last week in October or first week in November. And that's a little bit early for mule deer. As you know, they tend to rut a little bit later than whitetails slightly, but that would be my thought process.
Yeah, October, you know, in any other state, I shouldn't say any other state. I mean, any state that has kind of any amount of timber in it, those October could be extremely frustrating time to try to hunt mule deer, as they'll kind of drop into the timber and their core area that they use is really small and they just don't move around much. But when you have more open country, like, you know, if you get into the Badlands versus, I think I'd probably go into the Badlands that, you know, that October time frame rather than trying to hunt them in the more timbered area like the Black Hills, just from a, you know, because it's so much more open that you're more likely to see them.
Sure.
Would you agree with that?
Well, I prefer the more open areas all the time, but you know, especially when you're talking about the bigger bucks.
Yeah. All right. Well, I can't think of anything else that I would kind of need to cover on the hunting end, but I may have touched on it there in the introduction. You do the ad sales for a traditional Bowhunter magazine, and how long have you been with the magazine?
Actually, next year will be 20 years.
Wow. All right.
So, I'm one of the old guys.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I got to share kind of a funny story. And you actually may even have been present when this went down there. I probably have shared this on the podcast before. I think this was 2011 at the ATA show. I ran into to the past Larry Fisher there, your old partner there, who unfortunately passed away, you know, a handful of years ago. But Larry and I think we probably bumped into each other in an aisle or something, and he asked me how my hunting season had gone, and I was recounting a challenging hunt there in Colorado where I had quite a number of shots that were deflected as I was stalking and you know, trying to put my tag on a mule deer, and he kind of laughed and put his hand on my shoulder and he goes, "South, a deflected shot is still a missed shot." I was kind of trying to, I guess, deflect the responsibility from myself for the deflected shots, but you know, you had a way of humbling you there. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, keep it real, right?
Exactly. Yep. Yep. But I
know there's, by the way, you know, I've been with traditional bow hunter a long time, but we're, you know, there's been some changes recently, and rather significant, and that's just sort of a new look to the, not sort of, a new look to the magazine, and updating, the webpage. And a lot of this is, Kerry Doyle is now the advertising manager, and Kerry is the daughter of TJ Conrad, the founder of the magazine. And she brings a lot of new ideas and, you know, not afraid to try things. So it's exciting to have her on board. And, you know, things, I just see a lot of real positive growth that's going to come through it, through the magazine. And we're all excited about, you know, the direction traditional archery taken. And,
yeah,
when I mentioned that, I think everybody, you know, when they think of traditional archery, and I say this, and non-hunters I'm including, is what we've seen out of Hollywood recently through the Hunger Games and some of the animation, they're all shooting recurves, right, Sal?
Yep, yep.
I don't know if you've seen any carryover in that, or it's more the archery dealers that are seeing that, but...
I think it's there, you know, that demographic there will, you know, the people that will stick with it and, you know, find a passion for archery, will trickle down into, you know, my clientele eventually. But I think a lot of those people are the, you know, the people that are buying a Sage Samick recurve and, you know, maybe getting in at that entry level. And I think it's fantastic. I mean, however we recruit them, whether it be through Hollywood or through hunting, I'm all about it for sure. But I think that most of those people are not, you know, dropping $700 or $800 or $1,000 on a custom recurve, you know, anytime real soon. But they're certainly, I mean, even if they don't stick with it, they're getting, you know, a taste of what, traditional archery or archery in general is about, and kind of, I think that in some ways opens up that door to, you know, the thoughts of hunting. And I think it's great. And I'm seeing a lot of people that, you know, shoot compounds that are, you know, getting curious about traditional archery and wanting to kind of, I mean, it, you know, back in the day when I first started bow hunting, when I first started shooting a bow, I shot a stick bow. And then when I first started hunting, I shot a compound. And back then, I mean, your effective range, if you were a really good archer, you know, might be 30 yards with a compound, and then slowly it stretched out. And I can remember, you know, there being huge controversies about talking about shooting, you know, at 50 yards in print, you know, printed magazines, yep. You know, 15, yep. 20 years, well, probably 20, you know, 20 years ago. And now guys are shooting stuff at 100 yards and that's almost, you know, like acceptable. And so I think that, there's a lot of people that are looking for a greater challenge, and you know, when your equipment becomes, you know, almost as effective as a muzzleloader, and even then the muzzleloaders too. I mean, now guys are tipping stuff over at 200 and 300 yards with muzzleloaders, and I think that there's a big draw for traditional archery for those people that are really looking to make the hunt more about their personal skills more than about, you know, what kind of technology they can put into their weapon there to you know, make punching or notching a tag easier.
Right. No, that's it does come down to personal satisfaction and challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we need entry level bows, and I'm hoping. And I see now that there are, you know, there's quite a few options entry level, which there weren't 20 years ago.
Yeah.
like you say, you know, if somebody can get into it for $150, $200 and they're certainly capable hunting bows, and then make the next step into a custom bow. So, and I think that's a necessary progression too.
Sure. Yeah. And I, you know, I want to be clear. I'm not knocking anybody who is shooting a compound or shooting a, you know, a inline muzzleloader or a long range rifle or any of that. I mean, I think we need all hunters and every one of them that we can get. Our population demographic is shrinking, you know, in the United States. And in order for us to, you know, to keep our liberal hunting seasons and opportunities, we need every, you know, every hunter to band together. And I just think that, you know, within the pool of hunters, you know, seeing movement within different weapons choices. And I've got a lot of friends that, you know, that hunt with a stick bow and also hunt with a rifle. And I, you know, have no issue with that. And I think it's fantastic.
No, I agree. Yeah, I know a lot of people are stick bow hunters, like you say, and also hunt with a rifle. And a lot of it is, you know, family type traditions. I think, you know, the weapon choice, as long as you maintain your hunting ethic and fair chase. I apologize. I got the youngest one wants to whine. She knows we're getting close. But
all right.
No, as long as that's maintained, and a lot, you know, I don't blame anybody that enjoys venison and doesn't fill their tag during the archery season, going out and filling some tags and putting some venison in the freezer with a rifle.
Sure, sure. That's a good question there for you. The tags for South Dakota are weapon specific, as far as if you buy an archery tag or you buy a license or a tag, then you are buying that for either archery or buying it for rifle. Is that correct?
Well, actually during the gun season, you can, doggone it. Got a stop sign coming up, and I'm passing this guy. He's gonna be mad at me. You can buy a gun tag and then hunt with any weapon, such as archery, any weapon that's less than that gun tag. So you can take your bow out during gun seasons. Is that what you were asking?
Well, no, I mean, you couldn't buy a gun tag and then bow hunt with that gun tag during the archery season. You would have to have an archery tag.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. You have to have an archery specific tag.
Right. Yeah, because I can't see any reason to buy a gun tag and then bow hunt with it during the gun season, because you could take your same archery tag and bow hunt with it during the gun season there, right?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, Mark, I appreciate your time. Is there anything else that you wanted to add in there that I may have missed?
Actually, I think you covered it pretty well. No, I enjoyed you giving me the opportunity to come on your program.
Oh, sure thing. I appreciate your time there, and good luck tipping some pheasants over today.
All right. Appreciate it, Sal. Take care and happy holidays.
Sure thing. You too. Thanks, Mark.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Western Bowhunter podcast, please remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so that new episodes will automatically be downloaded to your device as soon as they become available. And while you're on iTunes, please take the time to give us a review. This will help us in the iTunes rankings and will help the podcast grow. Share it with your friends on social media. If you've got a topic that you would like to see covered or a guest that you'd like to hear from on a future episode, email it to South or Cody at info@thewesternbowhunterpodcast.com. Thank you for listening. Memories of time spin away, vanish into the sun. Oh,
GoHunt.com, our goal is to be the very best at what we do. We are constantly putting value and new information at our users' fingertips. It's our job to always go above and beyond for our customers. We don't want you to stress days of researching or paying hunting consultants to give you unreliable and opinionated information before your hunt. That's why we're giving you the power and ability to find exactly what you want when you want it. And with the introduction of draw odds and filtering 2.0, it's never been easier. So why wait? Join the movement today and start finding the perfect hunt for you. Go Hunt Insider, the new breed of hunter. Visit GoHunt.com/insider and join the movement.